accession number 10739, Reel 2.
Bert West, Reel 2.
You were saying that you really wanted to get into the Navy proper. What was the procedure for that from the Mercury? Was it automatic that they would send you then to a ship like the Impregnable?
Well, after you've done your training, sufficient training, when you were of age, like 16, then you were ordained for the Navy. But
did you have to take a test?
Well, no. Let me go back to the time I joined the Mercury. After the seaman's truck had given me my number, and that, I was put in a class, and then we used to do our various instructions of the shore establishment. And then at night time, we used to roll out to the ship in the cutter and sleep there. And it was... The sleeping accommodation wasn't very good. We had a bare hammock with one blanket in the summer and two in the winter. And you used to use our trousers and jumper as pillows. And in the morning, we had to be pretty alert because by the end of the bugle call for the reveille, the end of the second call, we had to be up, dressed, and our hammock stowed away. And of course, we used to row ashore in the cutter for the bath procedure, which consisted of entering a room, a large room with the perforated pipes running around the edge of the roof, and you had to go through this as sort of a shower bath. And I'm passing in to the main. From the dressing room part to the actual bath, they used to put a small knob of soft soap on your head, which was bristly, and you used to get quickly under the shower and rub that down to get through the bath as quickly as possible to dry and then get out. You had to be clear of the bathroom within 8 minutes. After which we used to go to either the schoolroom or the gymnasium for cleaning up your clothes and getting dressed all ready for divisions before breakfast. Then after breakfast time, of course, then we used to have a routine of instruction, seamanship school or rowing or whatever is on the syllabus for the day. And then in the evening, after the instruction, we used to row out again to the ship. Now, all these activities were timed by a stopwatch, and if you were late, took a long time going through the bath, you should get booked 10, my number was 1070, slack through the bath, or slack falling in, or whatever. And each boy was allowed tuppence a week pocket money, provided he didn't lose any marks for slackness. There was no corporal punishment, so the punishment was either losing your pocket money at the end of the week or losing our ration of cake on Wednesdays and Saturday afternoon, which each boy was allowed a slab of cake, which we used to call a brick, and we used that for bargaining purposes. Well, after about a month, I got reconciled to the routine, and that, and I even began to like it, and the discipline did me a world of good. I was taught how to look after myself, how to take care of myself. We had boxing lessons and so on, And instead of being a spoilt boy, I rapidly grew into a young man that was able to
Navy,
yes, well, I was able to hold my own against other people and had a different slant on life altogether. Well, now, after I'd been there about 12 months, I suppose my education was a little more advanced than the majority of them. I, one of the boys selected for what they called the special class, and there were four of us selected for this class, in which we used to do 3 hours extra instruction twice a week, for which a professor from Southampton University used to come down and take us, and his name was Newman, Professor P. E. Newman, signed himself Penn. And we were taught the mysteries of algebra, trigonometrics, and various things, and, which was really advanced.
And I suppose this was all further training to get you ready for the proper Navy.
Yes, well, I had no idea what this extra class was for, but at the end there was an examination, and two of us out of four were sent for by C.B. Fry to the office, and congratulated on passing this examination, and said, "You are now passed the examination for apprentice to engineering, and you join the Navy as a boy artificer." So I said, "But I don't want to be an artificer. I want to be a sailor." Can I use a? He said, "You bloody little fool." And I thought he was going to strike me. But anyhow, when we were doing these extra classes, we were given no indication what it was for, except we were called special class. When we sat the examination, we had no idea that we were entering the examination for a boy artificer. So, anyhow, I was in disgrace. And the following Monday, I was sent for the office, said, "Put your clothes on. You've got half an hour. Put your best clothes on. You've got half an hour to say goodbye to your messmates. And you're going to Southampton to join the Navy." An instructor then took me after breakfast, and I said goodbye to my pals and took me to Southampton to Bugle Street, where I joined the Navy as a boy. Then I was given a luncheon bag with a couple of buns and sandwiches in, escorted down to the railway station by a Royal Marine who bought my railway ticket, saw me in the train for Devonport, and said, "Goodbye, sonny, and best of luck to you." When I arrived at Devonport Station, I was met by another Marine, who then took me down to Mutton Cove in Devonport, where we were rowed out to the Impregnable, which is the boys' training ship there, lying off Mutton Cove. And when I put my feet on that ship, I felt I was in heaven. I was in the Navy at last, in the real Navy. And I felt I was really there. Well, the next morning, everybody seemed to be leaving the ship. So one of the instructors said, "Oh, it's the boys going on leave." And the few boys that were left, the boys had no home to go to, or rather to stay behind in the ship. And we had a few instructors and caretakers there. And then that day I was kitted up. And all the clothes that I had, all the Mercury clothes, were made up in a parcel and sent back to the Mercury. So actually I didn't even have a toothbrush to comb it. I was absolutely... except for the new clothes, and then we had so much kit that I felt like I felt well a king with all this clothing and everything to call me home, my ditty box, Bible, knife, uniform, boots, socks, everything was mine. I felt as rich as a king there. Well, the second day the commanders I passed the schoolmaster said for me I'd have passed it. School examination, which was a walkover for me, and then the next day I had to pass a seamanship instruction, ask a few questions on naval signals, made and sent semaphore signals, asked questions on knots and splices, and told to get in a boat and row around the ship, and all which was easy to me. And the commander sent for me and said he passed a very good examination. He said, you are now rated a first-class boy, and would you like to go on leave? I said, yes, please. He said, have you got anywhere to pay your fare? I said, well, my father is station master at Romsey, and I'm sure he'd be pleased to pay the fare. So he sent a telegram to my father, which he paid for out of his own pocket, and... got the money, and I went on 10 days leave, and they gave me 30 shillings, which was for my board and lodging for 10 days. And I felt not only proud of my uniform, but I felt rich as well. And that's how I came to join the Navy. So I had 10 days leave after being in the Navy only for 3 days.
That surely must have been very unusual.
Very unusual. The reason, I suppose, Mrs. Fry had written to the commander of the Impregnable to say that by joining at that time I'd just missed my summer holiday for the Mercury. So the commander, out of his kindness of his heart, he not only wrote to sent a telegram to parents, paid for that out of his own pocket, but wished me the best of luck and congratulated me, and I got rated first class boy.
When you returned from your holiday, you know, having had these 10 days off with your 30 bob, did you then have to start training on the Impregnable? You know, did your training program
Yes, we had 3 months training as a first class boy. When I rejoined, I remember the number of the class, 54A, which is class 54, advanced class boy. Now, advanced class boys only had 3 months training, where the ordinary boys, as they were called, had 6 months training on the training ship. Now, at the end of the training, up to my time, when they left the Impregnable, they used to do 3 months in the brigs. And they never considered themselves proper sailors until they had done their brigs, as they called it. Have you done your brigs? You're not a proper sailor yet. And when it came to my turn, the Admiralty apparently had changed the system and decided that from now on the sailing part of the training was out, and they sent all the boys to battleships for training, which they considered be more necessary part of training, as the shadows of war were in the offing. So that's where I did my training.
So you didn't actually go to the brigs?
No.
Did you like?
I missed my brig. Well, we were in those days were very proud of having done your brigs, you see, and I couldn't brag that I'd done my brigs after that. So,
well, were you, while you were on the Impregnable, you know, as this young advanced sailor, Were you getting into the naval tradition, learning the sort of the various aspects of naval tradition?
Oh, yes.
Could you tell me something about that?
Well, the schoolmaster in those days was responsible for teaching you tradition as well. And we, of course, would talk about the empire and well, all things to do with naval tradition. And one of the songs we used to sing was at number 3 Old England Square by Nancy Dawson. She was there. And the other one was Tom Bowling. Now, we often used to have to sing those, so we had really the naval tradition ingrained to us.
Could you sing a verse of them to me?
Oh, I can't. At number 3 Old England Square, mark well what I do say. At number 3 Old England Square, my Nancy Dawson, she lived there. And will go no more a-roving with my fair maid. A-roving, a-roving. No, I can't remember it anymore.
Well,
but
that's a type of thing. That's very good. And you would all sing this together, would you?
Yes, we would. Yeah.
Company. Was that a happy ship? You know, the training ship Impregnable.
Oh yes, I remember my days in the Impregnable. For me, of course, that was very easy, because in those days they said, "Oh, you join the Navy, that's a tough life." But after life on the Mercury, which really was tough, the Impregnable, the naval training, was easy. Now, I used to go every morning after physical training. We used to have to go over the masthead. We used to go up the rigging, not over the masthead, but over the top. The instructors used to have a little, the PT instructor used to have a little cane. And as you came down the other side, the last one down, you used to get a little wallop with a cane, you see, to smarten you up a bit. But I was one of the first, because of the Mercury, we taught to run the rigging instead of going up over the futtock shrouds, over the up through Lubber's Hole. I used to go up through futtock shrouds. I used to lay back like that. But that was all easy for me. And seamanship instruction, of course, was easy for me. As a matter of fact, I said I knew more about the naval signals than my seamanship instructor did, because I knew the whole of the Navy code and the international code. I could recite the box of compasses and quarter points without looking at the card, which was a... So I was a very keen sailor, and the instructor used to like to have a stodger boy in the class, because very often when it came to the signals, the flags, he'd go back to his mess for half an hour and say, "You take charge of the class and carry on." That made it easy for the instructor.
You said a stodger boy. What is a stodger boy?
Well, the instructors in the training ship used to call us stodger boy. A boy came from the training ship, either the Mercury or the Warspite, had a good knowledge of seamanship already, you see, and most of them could do knots and splices and know the compass and things like that, and it made it easier for the instructor. So the instructors used to like boy from the training ship, you're a stodger boy.
Well, if some boys misbehaved at all, you know, if they were did things wrong on this particular ship, the Impregnable, was the discipline and punishment? Could you tell me about that?
Well, boys weren't allowed to smoke, and the biggest offence, the only offences I know that any boy got punished for was to get caught smoking. Now, the boy's pay in those days was only a shilling a day. Only sixpence a day, which was 3 and 6 a week. But of that, you only got sixpence a day pocket money in the training ship. Now, Saturday afternoons used to go ashore and Sundays, and we sometimes walked to Cremel, I think it's Cremel Bay, about 3 miles walk over there, or you could kick a football about in the recreation ground. But very often we used to go in there, you know, you get a cup of tea and a bun for a paddy sort of business. And with the rest of the money, a stamp only used to cost a penny, but we used to prefer to send postcards. Well, we used to get postcards for nothing and only cost you a halfpenny to send a postcard. Punishments. The only punishment that we ever received there was caning. Now, that was a very, to my mind, still a very sadistic affair. While you were ashore, some boys were brave enough to buy cigarettes and secrete one inside the rim of their cap or somewhere. And in the heads, they have a sentry on the heads, and a row of seats there with a screen in front. And there's always a marine sentry on there. If he smelt the smoke, he'd sometimes catch a boy smoking. They used to that's the only chance you had to get in the head, you used to have a little smoke, and they used to pass this cigarette from one to the other. And if they ever got smoking, the first time you got caught was 6 strokes of the cane. And if you ever got caught a second time, that's always 12 strokes. Now, only on 2 occasions during my period in the training ship was one of my classmates ever caught. Now, the system of punishment was this. The vaulting horse was brought out on the deck, and you were stripped of your clothing except for a pair of duck trousers, and then the boy was put across a vaulting horse, and his hands were tied to the legs in front and his feet behind. Now, present for the situation was the officer of the day, the master at arms, and the ship's corporal, who was the minister of the punishment, and a doctor. And the officer of the day used to say, "Start the punishment." The master at arms had a stopwatch, and he used to say, "One." And I think there were about 3 seconds interval between each count the strokes. And the corporal used to administer the strokes. And the doctor was there in case the boy fainted on the weak, but he'd say, "Start the punishment." But after a while, it always commenced. But whether they stopped the punishment or not, the boy always had to receive his punishment. And the punishment was so severe that you great wheels across your buttocks, and very often the boy couldn't sit down to eat his meal, had to stand up for 2 or 3 days. Now, that was a punishment we received as boys in the Navy, right up to the time you were 18. That was a boy's punishment, 6 or 12 of the cane. And as I say, on the Prague, that was the only punishment that punishment was given for was for smoking. So it was a good thing, really, that boys weren't allowed to smoke till they were 18, when they suddenly became a man, allowed to draw your tot, allowed to smoke, messed in a man's mess instead of a separate boy's mess, and and stop you calling boy everywhere, boy this and boy that.
What did you think of your tot of rum? No, was that important, that naval tradition?
Oh, it was. That was a gig. Although it was against regulations, it was a big bargaining power. You get lots of things done for a tot of rum. Yeah. Say, you perhaps, will you do my trick in the change or something? Yeah, that cost you a tot, you see. And rum, of course, was the a big bargaining power. You get lots of things done for a tot of rum in the Navy then.
They stopped it some while ago, didn't they?
Oh, yes, that's what, 1960, was it? Somewhere there. Yeah.
You were saying earlier, Mr. West, that, and I think I interrupted you to ask you some more questions about the impregnable, but that the war clouds were looming while you were there. You know, that did you have any sort of feelings about Germany? Did you get any information about
Germany? No, not at all, no. Not right up till, I suppose it was beginning of 1913. By that time, of course, I'd done my seagoing training in the St. Vincent. I'd been in, after that, been in barracks awaiting draft for about 6 months or 3 months anyway, when I joined the Hercules. Now, I joined the Hercules in 1912, and she was then the flagship of the 3rd Battle Squadron. She was a post-dreadnought ship. She was classed, I think, as a dreadnought ship. But I remember when I was on the Impregnable, seeing the Hercules launched. She was launched then, little dreaming then that one day I'd be on the Hercules. She was the flagship of Sir John Jellicoe. Now, of all my time in the Navy, that was a ship I loved best. She was a happy ship. She was an efficient ship. And everybody was so proud of her. And during the regatta time, we were the winners of what they call the Cock of the North. That is the ship that got the most points during the regatta, were awarded this cock they used to fly at the masthead. Now, men in those days were very proud of the ships, and many a fight happened ashore when two ships' companies met and they had a disagreement. If anybody spoke anything, said anything derogatory about your ship, that was a free-for-all fight.